He Said, She Said, or Technically Speaking and Simply Put.
Hello, Tracy.
Hello, Corey.
Oh, my goodness, it's September. The sky is falling. The leaves are starting to change color. Is it that time of year again?
It certainly is. Gotta tell you, it's a lot cooler, a lot nicer for sleeping. I got the old flannel pajamas out now, looking pretty hot in bed.
Well, the mornings are getting colder here in Vernon, and yet yesterday we were outside playing soccer, keep up, and playing some basketball, running around on the lawn in our bare feet, so it's still pretty cool.
Oh, yeah, beautiful afternoons, that's for sure. But it's changing, the leaves are falling, you got that right.
Change is the only constant.
Whatever you say, Dr. Holly.
So what's on your mind? What's cooking?
What's cooking is cashew black bean chili. Yummy. And this is a great recipe for those who want to go more vegetarian. And you know, maybe as you age, you might not want to have as much meat into your diet. But this is just a really nice change. So I usually make a huge batch, because I give some to Ruby, so she has quite a few bowls of it, and then we share it amongst our friends. So this makes 8 to 10 large bowls, so you can cut this recipe in half. So I use like 2 cups of unsalted cashews. I use 8 cups of fresh or canned plum tomatoes with the juice, 6 cups of cooked black beans, 1 tablespoon of olive oil or coconut oil, 1 large yellow onion, 2 stalks of celery, 1 of each, a yellow and an orange pepper, 3 carrots, and a bottle of lager beer, 2 bulbs of freshly grated raw garlic or 2 tablespoons of garlic powder, 2 tablespoons of chili powder, 1 tablespoon of garam marsala, 2 tablespoons of cumin powder, and salt and pepper for your own liking. Usually I add a little salt or pepper or some Bragg's after it's been cooked, just so you can see your own liking. Now what I do is I make sure that I chop all the pieces of onion, celery, peppers, and carrots in uniform pieces, so they're all the same size. And in a large soup pot, I add the olive oil or the coconut oil, and I saute the vegetables very, very lightly. Then with the vegetables in the big pot, I add the beer, I add the garlic, and then I stir in the tomatoes, the beans, and then the cashews. Then I add the chili powder, the cumin, the garam marsala, and I just cook it and cook it and cook it. I don't bring it to a boil. I like to keep it simmered for about 2 to 3 hours. And I always find that everything tastes better the next day. So usually what I do when I make soups, stews, or chilies, I make it a day ahead. I put it in the fridge, then I bring it out, and then I reheat it on a low heat, maybe for about a half an hour, and then we eat it, and it's just so darn delicious. So the cashews, instead of beef or chicken or turkey, like I usually make it. So this is just a little different with a little hint of the Indian spices in there. And it's just so delicious.
It is. Now, I'm researching, as we discuss your recipe, the cashew nut. So what is it about the cashew that you like or that attracts you to cashews?
Well, cashews are not as fattening as macadamia. And they've got a protein content, magnesium, calcium, a lot of nutrients in there. And they're just absolutely delicious and crunchy, and they're very versatile nut. They are a tree nut, however, so that if you do have tree nut allergies, I suggest that you don't eat them. But like I said, it's just a nice alternative. There's about 553 calories per 100 grams of nuts. So that's pretty high calorie.
Yeah, they're high in fat, obviously, as are pretty much all nuts and seeds, not in protein, not in starch or carbohydrate, but principally fat. And, of course, fatty acids and types of monounsaturated, polyunsaturated, and saturated fat. But, you know, it's interesting because I have a connection to cashews because, first of all, I love them. If I was going to put a medley of nuts together, it would include fresh cashews.
Yes.
But I try to remember where I've seen them in my travels, and I'm reading through the history of the cashew tree and the nut, and it originated from Brazil. The primary producer of the nut today is Nigeria, India, Vietnam, so it comes from these areas of the world that have a certain kind of geography and humidity and temperature and all the rest of it. Obviously not in Canada or the United States. But when I was in Goa, I remember these cashew trees. And here I am reading here about the history of the cashew plant being brought by the Portuguese to Goa, which is south of Bombay on the coast. It's like a little commune, little community that at one time was very popular as a shipping supply center from boats. And then I remember seeing cashews everywhere traveling through Indonesia, and there's a lot of cashew trees there as well. So, like, we've got walnut trees in our backyard,
right,
which is kind of cool to see
right.
a tree that has nuts and actually to pick them off the tree. It's kind of cool.
Right, especially in Canada. But I've never seen a cashew tree myself, but hoping one day that I can get someplace where I can see a cashew tree, pick it off the tree, and away I go. But I've always loved cashews. So this is a nice little recipe. And when I think about this, I'm going to have to make this again real quick, won't I?
Absolutely. And what's not as popular here because of issues with transport is the cashew apple attached to the nut is an actual fruit
right.
that in these other countries are consumed as a staple. But because they go off easily and they don't have much of a shelf life, there are issues with transport. So that's why we seldom ever see them. But you can also make alcohol and wine and those kinds of things from this cashew apple, which is kind of cool.
Well, isn't that an interesting piece of trivia? So that'll be one of my recipes that I'm going to put into Vista Magazine and Status Fitness Magazine. And it's a great alternative, as I mentioned, to meat. And it's a really nice, hearty meal that is wonderful in the colder weather.
It certainly is. I mean, who doesn't love a good bowl of chili, huh?
I know. Now, you can top it over rice if you want to, but we just usually just have it in a big bowl, so without any starch with it, because it's filling enough as it is with the black beans. And the black beans are a nice alternative to the kidney beans or a white bean.
Yes, and that medley of food products in your recipe, that's overall, I think when I'm looking at it, I see like a low glycemic, a slow yield of energy,
mm-hmm.
a slow and digestion.
Beer, and the bottle of beer that you put in, you don't have to worry about any alcohol because it burns off as you cook. So that's fine for anybody who has problems that can't have alcohol. So, but it just gives that nice little flavor. So try it out.
Yeah, and in actuality, I would like to have bottles of beer brought to me as I'm consuming my chili. Because
normally you do. Normally you do.
Make it spicy, and beer seems to be a fantastic thirst quencher when you're eating chili. They go hand in hand.
We don't drink with our meals, however.
Not normally.
Yes. So
have a glass of water before I eat, but the exception, of course, is beer.
With chili. Okay.
Yeah.
All right, so try it out.
Good stuff. So who was our last month's special guest?
Last month's special guest was Mr. Tony Dolezal. Now, I met Tony at Spartacus Gym way before I met you, Corey.
No, you didn't.
And he's always been very eager to help anyone who asks him. He's extremely generous with his time and expertise. And he explained the difference between different kinds of lifting. And he says that the different types of lifting are completely different sports: Olympic lifting, powerlifting, and bodybuilding. So he says Olympic lifting is the sport of evens between the back and the chest. He said there's a lot of technique, strength, speed, timing, coordination, and flexibility. And he says if you want to try this type of sport, do it when you're young, start when you're young. And he says you absolutely need a coach to do this, to learn the techniques. Otherwise, you might not succeed in this sport. Powerlifting is a bit simpler than the Olympic lifting, which includes the squat and the deadlift, and this training is quite complex. Bodybuilding is about the muscular physique, and he says bodybuilders, it's a good idea to do some jumping or plyometrics to really bring out the muscle and to stretch.
Yes, now, this brings to my mind the concept of eclecticism, because I think that over time I have incorporated a variety of movements. Some of them are Olympic lifting in terms of origin, others like bench, squat, deadlift, obviously powerlifting. Bodybuilding brings some new, fresh movement, different movements that say, a power lifter or an Olympic lifter wouldn't really be interested in.
Right.
My observation of longevity and sustainability is that bodybuilding, when it's performed correctly, can outlive Olympic lifters and power lifters.
Well, this is interesting. What he talks about is, okay, so I'm just going to go on to this. He talks mainly, he's all about the back, because he had a lot of back injuries when he was younger, and he's learned how to rehabilitate himself, which what he does today is he helps rehabilitate others, which made him, forced him through necessity, is to build his own lower back equipment, which he now sells. And he says that lower back problems and back problems are paramount. Most have no knowledge of how to strengthen their backs. Even athletes have a tendency to neglect their lower back, not making it a priority. So you've got these power lifters, these Olympic lifters and bodybuilders who are not really working on their midsection, which is the core and the abdominals, which are neglected. So there's no warm-up, no conditioning, which leads to injury. And overtraining, of course, has always been a problem.
Yeah, well, core training is the third phase of my 5 Steps to Health program. We don't neglect the core. I call it walking around the core. So we bring in about 10 different movements that literally incorporate activity and muscle contraction, you know, the abdominals, the intercostals, the serratus, the lower back muscles, the erectors, the multifidus, etc. So he makes a great point there, and he, like many athletes, comes to it out of necessity because of injury. Just like the rotator cuff movements, I learned to do those before I had rotator cuff damage so that I wouldn't have any.
Right.
But it was Tony that turned me on to reverse hyperextensions.
Yes, me
too. In the gym yesterday, or the couple days ago, I was doing back, and this friend that I had met recently said, "What are those? What are you doing?" And I was doing reverse hyperextensions. And so they're so uncommon in the gym that usually someone with a sharp mind will look at me doing and say, "What are you doing? What are those for?" And of course, I was doing them on a slanted hyperextension bench. You can modify equipment in the gym and get things done if you just use your wits and look at maybe some videos online to get an idea of how to perform the exercise.
Well, this is what Tony did. He improvised, and then he says, you know, enough of this. I got to build my own machine. So he has his own machines out there, and on that last interview, he's got his website, and you can ask Tony any question, get a hold of him. And you know what's really interesting about this interview with Tony is it really brought me back to reality. It's always good to revisit the information, as we tend to take our bodies for granted. And he said, if you really have some very bad backache problems, he says, get it checked out. He says, because there could be some underlying problems there, right? So I really enjoyed his interview. And like I said, I got to get back on those reverse hyperextensions. So thank you, Tony.
Yeah, no doubt. Yeah, it was good. I met Tony not too long ago in the gym at Grimm's Gym in Port Moody, and he has quite a following there, and it's great to see someone like him who's been doing what he's been doing for so long, and he continues to do it and offer people support and advice, and
yes.
He's very good that way.
He's wonderful that way.
Yes, and such a great example. Okay, so thanks to Tony. So what's the hot topic?
Woo! The hot topic for September is we have a new baby granddaughter. Little Veronica Emerald was 7 pounds, 9 ounces. That's a big baby girl. She was born on August 18th at 1 o'clock in the morning. And she's just the light of my life and yours as well. And she's just the perfect little baby. Let's just hope she stays that way, huh?
Well, I like watching the interaction between her sister, Riley, who was born a couple of years ago, and she took to her very well. She's very gentle and positive, and that's important. But it also brings to mind the effects of the second and third and fourth baby. You know, you and I have gone through this, but initially, the first baby, there's a lot of anxiety, a lot of expectation, and we now know that only children and also the firstborn are treated differently in the womb by the mother. Her thoughts are different. The environment around her, people, expectations, the father, all that is a different experience than the next one that comes.
Right. And Ruby's breastfeeding, and the baby's a wonderful little girl, and Riley, who's 2, yes, ladies and gentlemen, she going through the terrible twos. You know, I had to get her a harness because for my own stress level, because she likes to dart off and she's like very, very independent. So I felt really bad when I went into the children's store and says, you know, I might be a bad granny, but I need to get a harness. And the gal was so great. She says, I sell so many of these, she says, and I use them for all my kids. So that made me feel a lot better. And Riley's taken to it. And no problem, because they'll dart right off onto the road, and they don't want to hold hands. They want to go and run and explore. So there's a long leash. Feel like I'm walking the dog, but, you know, it's beneficial. Unless she's at the park, then she can go. But when you're walking along the side of the street with the big cars, heavy cars, and they're not pedestrian-friendly here in Vernon, I got to tell you. So for my own mental health and stress level, I got her a harness.
Well, it's only a short period, yes. And it's for their own protection. Now, yesterday I was running her, and I took her across this semi-highway close to where Ruby lives in Vernon, and I just kind of, like, let her go down this cement-like path. Oh, it's maybe a couple of 2 or 3 meters wide, so it's quite wide, and it's away from the road, and it's protected by kind of a grass section, so it's very safe. But I just let her go, like literally like a wild animal, and she just takes off and starts sprinting. And I keep up with her, and I'm glad that I can. I'm glad that I don't have to use a walker, that I'm crippled, or my knees are shot. I'm glad that I can run beside her. And this is the fun, I think, that grandparents can really have with young kids.
Well, the beauty of it is we'll run. I'm walking super, super fast, and she's running, and she's puffing and panting, and her cheeks are getting red, and she's looking at me, and we're running, and I'm telling her what a fast runner she is. And after we do this, we get home, she gobbles down a nice big protein shake every time, huh?
Yeah, what was she gobbling down yesterday also that was fantastic to see her
nori,
shopping?
The seaweed.
Yeah, like little squares of it, like just shoving them in, and she couldn't get enough of
it. She shoves them in her mouth. And
build that brain, baby. Build those essential fats into your brain and get that chlorophyll and all those elements into the fabric of your being. And it's just awesome to see her at two doing that when you see so many two-year-olds eating the worst possible crap that we can create in factories.
Now, that's child abuse as far as I'm concerned. But
totally, because they're ignorant of what's happening to them. We are literally destroying their insulin chemistry and their brains and bones by feeding them this crap.
Right.
And it's a great disservice, and it's a terrible issue, the lack of responsibility in the parent who usually themselves pays no attention to their own health and wellness.
Right. So that's our hot topic for today. And she's hot, two little granddaughters here, and it's absolutely fantastic, and we're really having a good time.
Right on. No other hot topics to discuss?
I don't think so. Not this month, anyway.
Okay. Yeah, so the key is, I guess, with the hot topic in this issue is to appreciate life, to understand what it takes to sustain it, maintain it, and when you're a parent or a grandparent, you can see the evidence of reality that comes through the course of time based on what we say, what we do, and how we treat our kids. And then as you grow up and become more mature and have a lot of insight to life and living and with other people, you can see why a lot of adults struggle with themselves and their world with different addictions and issues. And a lot of it has to do with how they were raised and their experience of being children.
Just one of the things that just going back and forth, I spend 3 to 4 hours every day with Ruby to help her out during this time. And basically, it's just to take Riley out. But I logged 125 kilometers that I walked in the month of August. In the heat, back and forth, walking. I mean, it was 90 and 100 degrees. And I'll tell you, this old girl, I pounded it up that hill. It was maybe 2 steps forward, 1 step back. But, you know, going back and forth, about a half an hour walk there and back, and, you know, going downtown and going to the park and going back to Ruby's house. So it was a lot of walking. I don't know, is that a lot of walking? It seemed like a lot of walking to me, but
well, by today's standards, of course, you've basically eradicated walking. People look down upon it. It's for the underprivileged. It's for people that are poor. It's for homeless people. But I would never walk. I'm too good to walk. I don't need to walk. I drive a car. But this reminds me also of the premise of functionality, or form follows function. Okay, so if you get what that truly means as an engineer, as an architect, as a scientist, form follows function. Okay, we have feet. They're designed to walk our legs connect, you know, especially with bare feet now. We know that bending the toes stimulates responses that get up to the brain. It's very, very healthy. But the lack of walking, because we're designed to walk and run by who or what? Nature? Yes, we're designed to do that. So if we violate our design by not using our design, we suffer the consequences. It's that simple. So to not walk is a direct violation of the form that you are stuck with, namely you're a human biped, right? We stand erect, we walk on our legs, and we're designed to walk and run. So if you don't use it, you do lose it.
Yeah, you certainly do.
Massive truth in that.
Well, I still got it. That's all I know. There you have it.
Right on. Good stuff. Well, that was a great one, dear. What's your final word?
My final word is by Henry David Thoreau. I would rather sit on a pumpkin and have it all to myself than be crowded on a velvet cushion.